I now at Dwayne Wade. Don't come down to Houston with that nonsense tomorrow night. Hashtag one last dance.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at a jam-packed 11-game slate from Wednesday, talk about a bunch of injury news that's come down as well, and then preview the 6 games on Thursday in the NBA. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. But before we do get to it, just a quick thing, just a peek behind the curtain here. A lot of the times when I'm doing the podcast, I do record the DFS portion early. Had to do that today because I had to head out with my son for his tennis lesson. So I recorded that part early and got home and then record the recap of the day's games. And just after I finished recording the DFS portion of the game, it was right at the end of the Utah game, Ricky Rubio got hurt. So I did mention him without mentioning his injury in that DFS portion. When you're looking at that bit, it does boost the value of someone like Royce O'Neal and Hull Neto for Thursday's games. But he got injured just as I was finishing up recording that portion of the show. So a bit of a peek behind the curtain that part did get recorded a little bit earlier today. Before that Utah Jazz game had wrapped up. I thought it was done. There was about 2 minutes left when Rubio got hurt, or 4 minutes left or whatever it was. And then, he went down. So unfortunately, that's, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's get on to the normal part of this show.
Monstrous line of the night.
Let's go through the monstrous line of the night. It is Kemba Walker of the Charlotte Hornets. Kemba played 37 minutes and had 35 points. He hit 4 triples, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a very, very nice 5 steals. The efficiency was fantastic as well. 12 of 22 from the field, 7 of 8 from the free throw line. Kemba has been up and down this season, never really been too far down, but we had that run where he was like top 10, top 12 for a bit. He's sort of stabilized to be the 20th ranked player now, 37th over the last 2 months. So his numbers are going to move quite considerably depending on how he shoots over the last 2 months. 41.7 from the field for the season, 43. There's your difference in 17 spots in the ranking. So Kemba was really strong here with really good efficiency. The last couple of games he hasn't been strong with efficiency. In fact, he hasn't topped 44% in the previous 5 games before today on over 20 field goal attempts. And he's had 20 field goal attempts for 10 consecutive games. So that can be a bit of an issue when you're looking at Kemba Walker's numbers. But otherwise, everything else pretty strong, and a nice little spike in his steal rate of late. He's also seen his assist numbers come down, which were pretty high to begin the season. So Kemba is your monstrous line of the night guy. He's just going to remain in that second or third round type of player for the rest of this season, one would assume.
Waiver wire line of the night.
It is throwback season because Dwayne Wade is your waiver wire line of the night. He is rostered in 34% of Yahoo leagues. He had 25 points, which included 5 triples, including an absolutely ridiculous banked in 3 after he got blocked on his first attempt. It fell back in his hands and he had this weird step back, 1 foot behind the line, banked 3-pointer. 25 and 5 triples, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, really turning back the clock. His form this season's been pretty strong, but over the last little bit it's been increased, 114th over the last month, averaging 16, 4 and 4 with a steal and a block, and the most important thing is 46% from the field. Underratedly, he's been shit from the line, 64% from the free throw line and just 32% from 3. But that assist-steals-points combination that Wade is bringing, it's not harkening back to peak Dwayne Wade when he was a top 10, top 20 guy, but considerably better than where he was last season. He's absolutely on the fringes of 12-team leagues at this point, probably more of definitely a stream-type guy, but if he's on your roster and it's working for you and it makes sense with your squad and with with his schedule, then by all means, Wade is providing that value as his minutes and his production have crept up over this last bit of time with a bit of a spike in usage as well for the Miami Heat. The deep leaguer of the night, Jalen the Burner Brunson of the Dallas Mavericks, back into the starting lineup today and was awesome. 34 minutes for Brunson, 24 points with 3 triples, 3 rebounds, 5 assists and 3 steals. Of course, 64% from the field is not a realistic number for Brunson to continue to do. I also think 34 minutes is probably not realistic for him also. Over the last month, and that's, you know, after trade deadline, he is the 194th ranked player. And he's been playing 26 minutes a night in that time frame, shooting 46% from the field, poor on his free throws, low steals. He's been providing okay assist numbers, but this is a real, you know, high level performance today. 4 games ago against the Nuggets, he was also at a high level of performance, 22 points, 5 assists, a steal and a block. Actually, since the All-Star break, his numbers have been pretty strong. With that 2 20-point performances, a 13-point performance, and just one dud against the Clippers. Is he a 12-team must-roster guy? Very, very much far from that. But with the spike in usage that Brunson is seeing at the moment and the potential of him, I guess, at least remaining in that mix to start quite often, he can be that option, especially when you're looking to stream in or really help yourself out in that assist category. He can be a 4 or 5 assists per game type of a player. And he's performing quite well at the moment, and you know, replaced Dorian Finney-Smith in the lineup today. And I imagine that we'll see a little bit more of him in that starting line with how well that Brunson did play in today's game. But that field goal percentage from him in this game is not something that is likely to continue. But at just 2% rostered in Yahoo, 20-teamers, 18-teamers, 16-teamers, you've got to grab him. And you'd consider him in 14s, and he might even have at some point some stream value in 12s. More of a watch list guy in 12-team leagues at this point in time.
Young gun of the night.
The young gun of the night, maybe not so young, is Bogdan Bogdanović. But of course, when I'm looking at young gun, it's a player in their first 2 seasons in the league. Bogdanović played 43 minutes in the overtime loss for the Kings. 28, 8, and 8 with 5 triples, 2 steals, and a block. He had 22 field goal attempts. He hit 10 of them and was 3 of 4 from the field. Bogdan is the 80th ranked player over the last 2 months. He's been in and out of the lineup. They've been moving him around. I continue to say that he is a better player than Harrison Barnes. But they started them together today. And now with the injury to Marvin Bagley, you would have to think that Bogdanović is going to absorb a fair chunk of those minutes. You're going to be playing Barnes, I think, almost exclusively at power forward as we move forward here in the season, although they might put Bielica back in there. But Bogdanović is a must-roster player. He's available in 28% of Yahoo leagues. He should be a 12-team must-roster guy. He's probably a 10-team league guy, especially with this development with Bagley. He gets assists. His steal rate is well up at the moment, Bogdanović. The field goal percentage can be a problem, but he's a great free throw shooter. He's hitting his threes. He's scoring at a decent enough level. Pretty hard to debate that he is not a must-roster guy. He scored in double digits in 7 of his last 8 games. He's had 14 assists in the last 2, 21 assists in his last 4 games. He's had 7 steals in his last 4 games. He's really going quite well here. And again, those couple of extra minutes that he gets here probably pushes him pretty solidly into that top 90, probably top 80, maybe even top 75 range for at least the short term, maybe the end of the season. I tell a man's not hot. The dud of the night, I can't go to anyone else apart from Caris LeVert of the Brooklyn Nets. 20 minutes for LeVert, and he had 2 rebounds. He had nothing else. He missed all 5 of his shots, no points, no assists, no steals, no blocks. It was a disaster of a performance from LeVert. He actually looked pretty good before this game. In his last game, he played 27 minutes and had 15, 5, and 7. This was an absolute stinker, though. But it is also a good reminder. And, you know, as know I do this when you tweet stuff at me, I will use it not to, you know, make examples of people, but to just illustrate some of the thinking that some people go through. So after today's game, someone said, oh man, LeVert was a stinker today. Is this a real red flag? Well, if you weren't saying that after last game where he had 15, 5, and 7 in 27 minutes and hit 2 triples, then you're not saying it after today. Yeah, it was shit today. There was no doubt about that. It's been rough. The shooting has been very, very bad. In fact, he hasn't got to over 40% in any of the last 6 games. That's rough. But this also isn't a red flag that, oh man, he's wrecked for the rest of the season. They are taking it slow with him because that was a serious injury. It's taking a bit of time for him to come back. If you're in a 10-team league, maybe you do consider LeVert not someone who's necessarily a must-roster guy. I would still be holding him in 12s, but if you are in one of the Red Rock Challenge leagues and your playoffs have started and you don't have a bye, then maybe you do have to move on from him. This is a guy who was excellent at the start of the season, but is still, for his combined numbers, which is 14 games pre-injury, 7 games post-injury, he's 115th. And some of the hype that he was getting, and I'm as big a fan of Caris LeVert as anybody, maybe not, because some people go over the top, but people were talking him as a top 30 fantasy guy, and he wasn't that player at all. And he was getting a little bit overhyped there. So perhaps he just isn't a top 100 guy for the rest of the season. That's fair enough, because his field goal percentage has been really, really poor since coming back. And we know that so much of shooting can come from your legs, and getting confidence back in his leg after that horrifying injury has obviously been a real concern for LeVert. And yeah, that might mean that he is a droppable guy. Now, this doesn't mean that he's a blanket drop, because very, very rarely is someone a blanket drop in all formats where you go, oh, that's it, he's out, I'm done, I can't deal with him anymore, I just drop him and don't have anyone to add. But he moves into that drop zone type area where you go, well, if there's someone else out there that I want to go and grab, then maybe he does become that expendable guy if we can't wait for him to get back to some of those numbers that he was putting up to begin the season. So a bit of a dud performance from Caris LeVert. The plus-minus go to the night, Maxi Kleber with a monster plus 165.9, really back at his best after a pretty lean run from Maxi. Probably not sure he's a 12-team league guy, while LeVert was the worst net rating, negative 120.1. It was just an absolute total disaster from Caris in that smackdown that the Nets copped today. There is a lot for us to talk about injury-wise here. Let's go through some updates. For the Grizzlies, Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr. and Kyle Anderson with their thigh and shoulder issue respectively. It wasn't necessarily positive news. We didn't get any real timetable, but Bickerstaff talking about Kyle Anderson, it's an injury he's had for years, and we're still monitoring to figure out what's going on. I think he's a pretty clear drop at this point. Triple J, I don't think he's going to be playing again this season. Pure speculation, but everything is coming out from the Grizzlies is really negative in that sense. We're going to be really as cautious as possible. There's absolutely no rushing here. There's no need for him to get... It is a thigh bruise, and you're like, it's a thigh bruise, who cares? But all that means is there's blood leaking into areas in his leg that shouldn't be there. And when you're talking about... I haven't seen his leg, so I can't 100% speak to this. But in general, when an athlete is dealing with a deep bruise, it means that their whole leg is gone purple. Pretty much. It's not like your bruise where you knocked your thigh on the edge of your bed and you've got like I'll use an American reference, you've got a purple dot the size of a quarter on your thigh. If we're talking about a deep thigh bruise on Caris LeVert's leg, I'd love for him, if you're listening, Caris, tweet out a picture, put it on Instagram what your leg looks like. But I wouldn't be shocked if his whole leg was actually purple from that bruise. Jaren. If you are listening, that's a real serious thing, and I do think that if he plays again this season, it's not going to be for 4 or 5 weeks, would be my guess, and then even then, I don't see him coming back. Jeff Teague missing more games with that knee issue. He's not a drop, but Tyus Jones is a solid enough stream, and I can imagine him missing a few more. He just is really beat up at the moment, old Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
Positive news, Spencer Dinwiddie looks like he's going to be back probably sometime this week from his thumb injury. Now, when everyone was healthy at the start of the season from the Nets, Spence was barely a top 100 guy. So don't go blowing your load in adding him off the wire and dropping actually a really good player under the expectation that Dinwiddie is going to be this top 50 guy. He's been up and down this season, but when the players were healthy, and I'm not saying that LeVert's healthy because he's clearly not fully healthy, but Dinwiddie was struggling to be a must-roster guy early in the season. So while he is probably a pickup in a lot of situations, if your team's super strong, which if you're still going strong at this point in the season, you probably are, maybe he's not the guy. Maybe he's not that player who's a must-roster guy. In nearly every case, he will be. But don't look at it as a fait accompli that Dinwiddie is this excellent must-roster guy, top 50 guy, bang, let's go. Because that just wasn't the case to begin this season. Bob Covington has been assigned to the Timberwolves G League team. He's not necessarily going to play there, but he's back practicing fully on court. So that's good news for his return. It's all going to come down to where are you at? Are you in the playoffs? Are you battling? Do you need to drop him? If you've held him this long, you can probably hold at least to see what happens over the weekend with him at the G League, but at least some positive news there with him. Hassan Whiteside missed Wednesday's game with a hip issue. He's going to miss Thursday's game as well with a hip issue there too. That means you've got a great stream opportunity for Bam Adebayo.
Bam! 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 Bam!
doesn't mean that Bam's a must-add guy or a must-hold guy. It doesn't mean that Whiteside's a drop, but initially it was reported as a hip pointer for Whiteside, and the Heat went out of their way to mention it was a hip strain, which to me is more serious and could actually result in some time on the sidelines, more time on the sidelines. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a week, 2 weeks absence here from Hassan. Some other injury news, Ken Faried had to leave today's game with a hip injury. His status is uncertain for Thursday. He'd already moved back to the bench. So today's game was a weird one. You see his minutes and you go, well, that's shitful. And it is. But he got like 4 fouls in about 17 seconds. Then he hurt his hip. So that's why he played so few minutes. But he'd already moved back to the bench. And if he is on the bench, I think if in 18 minutes a night, 19 minutes a night, he's not a 12-team league guy. I always had questions as how that would work, him starting Nesta Capella. They used it in literally one game with a fully healthy roster, and then they went away from it. They might spot start it here and there, but the fact that they went to it and then after one game bailed on it means that I don't have full faith that we're going to see Faried being a mid to high 20s guy. In fact, he only played 26 minutes in the starting role in that first game next to Capella, the second game, the one where Harden was actually back in the lineup. So that does give me some concern for him as a 12-teamer. Iman Shumpert hurt his calf. He's not impacting anyone's leagues. Well, Luol Deng also left today's game with a sore Achilles. You'd have to think that he won't play on Thursday. The injury I talked about earlier, ravishing Rick Rubio with hamstring tightness. His hamstrings are a real, real worry, and I would have to assume that he misses at least one game, at least Thursday's game, with this hamstring issue. We know how often he's had this problem, and the Jazz need him. If you're looking for a stream option, Royce O'Neal becomes that deeper league sort of a guy, maybe even into 16-teamers. Hull Neto can be an assist stream type of option, and we'll see a lot more Don Mitchell playing point guard, which will help with his assist numbers. And lastly, the big injury news, Marvin Bagley III hurt his knee. It did not look great at all. Carried off the court in a brace. Now, he did walk out of the arena with that brace on his leg, but we have seen players walk out of arenas before. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine, after their latest ACL injuries, both walked out okay. They were both also dubbed as knee sprains, which is exactly what the Kings dubbed Bagley's knee. He also said, I'll be all right. Now, whether that means I'll be all right for next season, I'll be all right for this season, I'm not sure. We'll have to wait for the MRI for Thursday. We're not dropping Bagley. Right, we're not dropping him. Let's see what happens here. This might be a 4-week injury, and then they would look to get him back in April, but they'd go really slowly there. It's his second knee problem this season. He had a bone bruise earlier in the year. It is a concern. One thing we have to look at is people are getting absolutely rock hard rigid about Harry Giles III, and I would preach a little bit of caution. Remember that Nemanja Bjelica has been the starting power forward for the entirety of this season, except for about the last 2 weeks. Now, yes, Bjelica did not play today when Bagley left the game. Giles only played 17 minutes, though, which is his regular playing time. And we saw a lot more small ball with Barnes and Bogdanovic playing a lot of those extra minutes, and Corey Brewer playing 20 minutes. So I do not think that we're just seeing Giles come in and play 30 a night. I would be stunned if that happened. I'm absolutely flabbergasted and floored if that happened. Bagley was playing a lot of center. So what I think we'll see happen is Cawley Stein, whose minutes were on the way down, they'll push back up to 30. You'll see Harrison Barnes push to 35, 36. You'll see Bogdanovic go from 28 to 33. You'll see Brewer go from 12 minutes to 16 minutes. And you will see Bjelica, I believe, back in the rotation. Often it happens an injury mid-game, and this happened just about before the end of the third quarter, that the rotations are sort of set, the coaches know what they're doing, and they weren't going to throw Bjelica out there for 2 or 3 minutes. But with some time to think, I wouldn't be stunned if we see Bjelica back in the starting lineup or him back in the rotation taking on a 20-minute or so a game role. I don't think he goes back to the 27 minutes a night that he was playing at the beginning of the season, where he was that really weird top 50 player. So I don't think he is a strong ad. Bogdanovic is the preference. Cawley Stein would be an interesting ad. Barnes, if he's dropped, maybe you look at him. But it's not like Barnes' struggles were because he didn't get any minutes or shot attempts. He was getting all those things. He was just really bad in them. So Bagley's absence doesn't mean, well, Barnes goes from 25 minutes to 35, because he was playing 35 anyway. He was just bad in those minutes. So it doesn't necessarily help there, but it will help more minutes for Cawley Stein. You might get a couple of extra for Giles, but if I had to put any money on it, I don't think Giles, or the likelihood to me is Giles is not a 12-team league guy. He is not coming in and playing 27 a night regularly, let alone 30. And yeah, Bagley was playing 34 a night, sure, but we can make that up with an extra 5 or 6 to Cauley Stein, a 5-6 minute bump to Bogdanovic, an extra 2 minutes to Barnes, minutes to Bielitsa, minutes to Brewer, and then 2 or 3 minutes to Giles, rather than him just going from 17 minutes to 27 minutes. I don't necessarily think that is. They also play Giles mainly as a center and not necessarily as a power forward, so maybe he just gets the backup minutes behind Cauley Stein, and that might be 19 minutes, it might be 20 minutes, and you give him 2 or 3 minutes at that power forward spot, and that would leave him in that fringe territory, similar to where someone like an Ivica Zubats has been, as that fringe 12-team league type of player. So it's not, I don't believe it's all aboard Harry Giles here. Others will disagree, but and you want to take a flyer on it because he's new and he's sexy and he was the number one recruit in high school 3 years ago, and that's, you know, a lot of people still have that memory of him, and he's had flashes, and today's game was great, but he didn't step on the court at all in overtime. He didn't play down the stretch of this game. He played only those 18 minutes and then never came back on in the second half of the fourth quarter, and his game was fueled by, I think, 9 of 13 shooting, which is an unrealistic expectation, and if he's not doing that, then where's the value coming from Giles? You know, I feel like I'm being overly harsh. I'm just trying to provide a little bit of caution or temper the expectation, because there are people who are just like, well, he's coming in, he's playing 30 a night. Like, no, probably not. I don't see it happening. Maybe you do. There are other options there for the Kings to use. And so, as I said earlier, so often the in-game rotation after someone gets injured is not the same as the rotation the next game when the coach has a time to think and game plan and get everything sorted in that type of scenario. And I do feel that that's probably going to be the case of what happens here with a reintroduction of Bielitsa, but that still remains to be seen. Let's go on to these 11 games now and break them down, talk about what went on in all of those games from a fantasy point of view. The first game we look at is the Rockets and the Hornets. The Rockets win 118-113. Clint Capela was back 41 minutes, 23-17 with a steal and a block. That's great to see. Well, Jimmy Harden had 30 points. It took him 29 shots to get there. And he's not quite where he was, or he's nowhere near where he was, because that was impossible to stick for, you know, the rest of the season. But still pretty strong. Chrissy Paul looking pretty good as well, 17, 4, and 10. Fareed, only the 8 minutes, I've talked about him already. Well, Terrence Jones came in and played 1 minute. Matt Smith was very, very pleased to see Terrence Jones back in an NBA game. Eric Gordon, 6 points in 35 minutes. I don't believe that Gordon is a must-roster 10-team league player with these players healthy. For the Hornets, Nick Batum, he is really thriving from the addition of Jeremy Lamb to the second unit. 17-6-6, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and 3 triples for Batum. He is a must-roster player, and he is thriving in this new role. While Miles Bridges, I wouldn't say he's thriving, but it is helping Batum. 23 minutes for Bridges, 9-6. If you added him in 12s, you can get rid of him there. You can get rid of him in 14-teamers as well. While the Jeremy Lamb minutes roller coaster settled back at the high end. 32 minutes for Lammy. 18, 4, and 6. That's two massive games in a row after his minutes were down at like 20 two or three games ago. Cody Zeller's big minutes continue, 13 and 7 for him. He's available in 59% of leagues. He is a must-roster player. Someone asked me on Basketball Monster today, yeah, why do you think that since he came back after the injury that the Hornets are playing him so many more minutes than before? And I think what happened is when he went down, they were running Bill Hernan Gomez, they were running Frank Kaminsky, they were running Bismack Biyombo, and they realized that these guys are shit. And they said, well, actually, we've got a center who's good. Let's just lean into him and play him actual starting center minutes instead of relying on these other ones. And one of the most confusing stories in the NBA at the moment is this constant, I should look this up, I don't know who Frank Kaminsky's agent is, but the constant reporting of Kaminsky, you know, the Hornets would consider adding Kaminsky in a trade. Frank Kaminsky's looking for a buyout. Where does he think he's going that teams are going to sign him and he's going to start playing big minutes? He's not good. It's so confusing. This keeps getting reported, and the Hornets keep saying, we're not going to buy you out. Like, why would we? Like, you can just stick here. Like, you're not that good. Don't have bargaining power. It's weird this keeps getting reported. This is an issue. Anyway, Marvin Williams, who was doubtful yesterday, played 33 minutes. So that's a quick healing toe. 12-6-3 for Big Marvel. Malik Monk, he has been an absolute disaster this season. 5 minutes, and he is well on his way to being out of the rotation entirely. I was wrong on that. I thought he was going to have a big role this season. Just completely shitful. The Golden State Warriors and the Miami Heat. The Heat win on that weird Dwayne Wade last second shot. 126-125. Klay Thompson was great. 36 with 7 triples and 3 steals. Durant had 29. Curry had 24. Well, Draymond Green got into foul trouble. That's why he played only 23 minutes. 5 points there for Draymond. And Kevon Looney started for the resting DeMarcus Cousins. 13 minutes for Looney because he had some early foul trouble there as well. I think Jordan Bell's ahead of Looney in the rotation now. 19 minutes for Bally, 10-6 with a steal and a block. That gives him some appeal in deep performance, although weirdly, Bally's rostered in 23% of leagues as opposed to Looney's 5%. Seems a little bit high there for old Bal. For the Heat, Goran Dragic, absolutely red hot. Now, you can look at that line from Dragic and go, 27 points, must-add player. And I'd go, calm down a bit, because he played only 20 minutes, and then your rebuttal might be, but Josh, 27 minutes in 20 minutes. Imagine if he, 27 points in 20 minutes. What if he plays 30 minutes? That's 50 points. And it doesn't quite work that way, because he shot 64%, not realistic, had a usage of 37%, not going to happen. So I look more at that 20 minutes there as he's working back from health. And maybe he is the guy from 2 years ago where his efficiency is, you know, back up high and he's providing that top 50, top 60 numbers. I'm not fully ready to buy it, and I'm sure as shit not buying it in 20 minutes a night. Joshie Richardson had 21. Justice Winslow was solid enough, 12-6-5, but it's not enough for me to label him a must-roster guy. While without Whiteside and Jim Johnson, Kelly Olynyk was great again, 15-5, and Adebayo had 10 rebounds, 11 points, 4 assists, and 2 blocks. And as long as Johnson and Whiteside are out, Olynyk and Adebayo are going to have value. It was a stinker from Dion Waiters. Foul trouble limited him to 23 minutes. Shit play limited him to 5 points. He was also 1 of 6 from the field. He'd been putting up some nice points league type numbers for 12-teamers. Yeah, a real 12-team fringe category league guy, depending on how your squad looked or how your roster ended up looking. The Washington Wizards blew out the Brooklyn Nets, 125-116. Thomas Bryant off the bench again. Now, he didn't play those 30 minutes that he played last game, but played quite well here. 20 minutes, 18-5. Now, people look and say, oh, you're being too harsh on Thomas Bryant. I think Thomas Bryant's good. I've thought he was good in LA. I thought he shouldn't have been waived. I thought the Wizards should have been playing him more here. I think he's better than Bobby Portis, because I do not think Bobby Portis is good. And you would have heard me say this for years and years and years. But it doesn't matter if I think that he is good. It's up to the coach to think he is good. And with the way that Brooks had been treating Bryant, when there was literally no other roster center on the roster and Thomas Bryant would play 17 minutes a night, my faith in Scott Brooks playing him a decent amount of minutes was pretty low. And the fact that he's moved him to the bench and he's played him a lot more minutes now is interesting. Now, 18-5 is great, but also 28% usage, 60% shooting. I just don't see that level of usage for Tom Bryant moving forward. Maybe he's a stream option, but if they're going to keep him on that bench behind Portis, then I just don't see the value in it. As for Punch Bob, 10-12 with 2 steals, he isn't good. He's still a 12-team league guy, but he's not a good player. Or Jabari Parker had 14 boards, 9 points on 9 shots, 5 assists and 2 steals. More of a 14-team league player. Satoransky had the 10 assists, that was nice. 7 points, not so good. Quick shout out to Brad Beal, who had 31-2-4 with 2 steals, 2 blocks, and 3 triples. I think he's going to be, where could he be if John Wall misses all of next season? Is he a top 8 guy? He'd absolutely be in consideration for that. They are playing him way too many minutes. They blew this one out, and even though it's a 9-point margin, they're well ahead. He still played 40 minutes. It's just too much for you, Scott Brooks, to be doing that. Ariza also had 23-10-5. For the Nets, they were bad, apart from Russell, who had 28-3-7. Jarrett Allen blocked 3 shots with 12 points, and Shabazz Napier had a weird 22-pointer with a 33% usage. Unlikely for that to continue. We saw Rondae Hollis-Jefferson back in the rotation. Rowdy Rodions Kurucs was there as well. Just minutes reduced all over the place. Very limited play there. Also, Taj McCall made his NBA debut, and yes, he is a player. He is on the Brooklyn Nets, and he had 4 points in 8 minutes. But realistically, not a lot for us to look too closely at with this Nets roster. The fact, the way the minutes are spread out here should give you an indication of how much of a blowout it was until the Nets put a few points on the board to end things off. The next game we look at, we've got the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Atlanta Hawks. An overtime victory from the Hawks is a bad loss for the Wolves. Towns continues to dominate, 37-18 with 5 triples in 41 minutes, and the shit free throw percentage, I guess, soured his game. 8 of 13 for 62%, but that elite field goal percentage was great. Well, Josh Okogie was strong, 15-4, 2 steals and a block. I like Okogie long term. Covington's return appears like it's going to be soon, and that's going to all but wipe out even deep league value for Okogie. Tyus Jones had his defensive issues with Trae Young, but still put up 11 assists with 2 steals and 7 points. Didn't shoot well. He is a 12-team league guy if he continues to start and play 30 minutes a night, but when Teague comes back, that won't happen. Derrick Rose had 18-6-6 with poor efficiency. He's a fringe 12-teamer, more of a points league guy. While Šarić is not a 12-team league player, 6-4-4 in 29 minutes on 1 of 11 shooting. I said that when they said he would be the starter, he'd need 33 a night to be a 12-teamer. He just isn't getting that level of playing time. For the Hawks, Trae Young has been amazing. 36-8-10, and the Baptist John Collins had 34-8 with 2 triples. No other numbers, no defensive stats from those guys whatsoever. But a real solid foundation for these players. And if both of those guys are top 40 guys next season, shit, top 30 guys next season, I wouldn't be surprised. It was also a big game from DeAndre Bembry, 16-14 with 3 blocks. But go back and look at his game log. He's not doing that every night. In fact, he very, very rarely has done that. More of that 18 or 16 team league stream option. While Kent Bazemore, 0 of 12, that is disgusting. 34% usage in 14 minutes for 0 points, that is disgusting. I don't know what other word to say for that. 5 rebounds and 4 assists for Bazemore. Prince, Huerta, Bembry are all going to be prioritized, I believe, over Bazemore. And while there was some short-term value there for him, I reckon you move on. Huerta had 6-6-3 in 30 minutes. So the minutes are back up, the efficiency's down. He's probably a 14-team league guy at this point. While Taurean Prince, the artist, 5-3-3 for Formerly in 26 minutes. Not good from him. He's been waylaid all season. He has these flashes of good games and then a bunch of shitful ones. Much like when talking about, you know, a lot of these guys that, you know, like LeVert, even if you're in that spot where you need production, then I don't think we're looking at a top 50 guy rest of the season. Move on. Just stream him. Do whatever you want. I still believe in him and I still think he can be a useful player, but it's about maximizing games played really at this point in the season. The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, fouled out in 19 minutes, hence the low minutes for him, while Vince Carter had 17 points in 27 minutes in what apparently, didn't get the memo, was throwback night of the NBA with Wade, Carter, and Dirk Nowitzki all playing well. The Portland Trailblazers beat the Celtics 97-92. Lillard was great, 33-7-4, while Nurkic had 16-6 in 30 minutes. Flamin' Mo Harkless, 17-10 with 3 steals on 62% shooting. If he's playing 37 a night, which he probably won't, but 30 minutes a night, high field goal percentage, steals and blocks, hitting threes, solid rebounding. He's a 12-team league guy. It's not for everybody. It might not be for your team. It might not work. But Jake Layman has been under 20 minutes in 2 consecutive games. That weird hot shooting streak that he had was only going to carry him so far. He shot okay now, but only 12 minutes in this game for Layman. Harkless looks healthy. He's rostered in 6% of Yahoo leagues. If you're in a 20, 18, 16, 14 team leagues, a must add. If you're in a 12, I reckon you got to look at him. He's playing really well. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
4-9 with 2 steals in 28 minutes. He's a real fringe guy. But let's talk Enes Kanter, who played 18 minutes and had 8-7 with 2 steals. So that's a little bit of a fluke. So Kanter, in his time in Portland, had 18-9, 16-8, and then 9-6 and 8-7. Which one of these is the real Enes Kanter? I think the way I've got him projected for this season is like 11-8. And that to me is a must roster 14 teamer, but not a 12 teamer. It's a real back end 12 team league guy. And yeah, after those 2 games where people were like really, really ready to deploy the old Turkish grip on Enes Kanter, not really sure that he is a must hold. He's not even going to play their next game due to visa issues in Toronto. These last 2 games are more realistic, I think, for what he will do as we move forward here. McCollum also struggled here, 14 points on 19 shots. Also, Rocket Rodney Hood, bad. Kyrie Irving, 31 points strong from him, while Marcus Smart bounced back. I had a feeling he would. 13-6-5, and Al Horford, 13-5-5. Tatum was poor. Jaylen Brown, 10-10, was okay. Marcus Morris, I think he's a drop in 12-teamers. He just hasn't been anywhere near that fluky type of performance he had for the first 40 or 50 games. And Gordon Hayward, rostered in 82% of leagues. Surely it's nobody in this that's listened to this podcast that has him in a 12-team league. Surely. He's gone. 60 games, he can't do it with Kyrie. He just can't do it. Maybe he can never do it again, but he should not be rostered in 12-team formats. I feel pretty good about saying that. I don't feel good about it. I feel pretty confident about it. The rampaging Chicago Bulls. They get the victory over the Grizzlies, 109-107. Otto Porter returned. He didn't have a Richie Beno. He had a triple three, a Chris Gayle, 20-6 with 3 assists, 3 threes, 3 steals and 3 blocks. Fantastic after that one game absence with a leg strain. He has been awesome since arriving from Washington. Whatever was going on with Scott Brooks, and more I look at it, Scott Brooks is just a bad coach and he makes nonsense, confusing decisions. Whatever that issue was, it made no sense, and Porter is really thriving. LaVine had 35-4, continues his strong form, while Chris Dunn returned. Now, he only had 9 points, but it's the 4 assists, it's the 3 steals for Dunny that do provide that value. I do think he is still a 12-team league guy. Lauri Markkanen, 22-10, with no defensive numbers. I think these are sort of performances from Lowry that are probably more commonplace in this hot streak he's been on. He also didn't shoot the ball all that well. 0 of 5 from 3-point land. Well, Robin Lopez played 40 minutes. That's a lot of minutes for Robin Lopez. 4-3 is disappointing, but the 5 blocks is nice, and he is a 12-team league guy. Speaking of throwback centers, Joakim Noah, 12-9 with 2 blocks in 21 minutes. He's got value in 12-teamers. Now, would you have him over Enes Kanter? I'd absolutely consider it. Would you have him over Robin Lopez? I'd probably go with Lopez. But Noah's providing value, and it's about getting the value while it's happening, and it's happening for Noah at the moment. Avery Bradley also, amazingly, is good again. Don't know how this is happening. 38 minutes, 23-7-7. I don't really see the need for the Grizzlies to be doing this with him, but by all means, he's playing well. If you want to snag him in a 14-teamer, you do it. If you want to snag him in a 12-teamer, I reckon you've got some ability to at least stream him. That's probably about it. Valanciunas had 13-7-4 in 27 minutes, while DeLon Wright 9-4-2 in 22. I wish they'd play him a little bit more. I still think he has some 12-team value. Justin Holiday is bad, 13 points, and is just a deeper league guy, while Bruno Caboclo started and had 7 points with 2 rebounds in 28 minutes, of course. Just a deeper league guy, while Ivan Rabb is out. The Detroit Pistons lost to the San Antonio Spurs, 105-93. Drummond's elite defensive performance, at least stat-wise, continued. 4 steals and a block. Only 10 points. His field goal percentage had been really high. It wasn't here, 36%. Still had the 17 boards, while Reggie Jackson had 22 points and very little else. And Griffin had 17-7-7. The insistence on playing Langston Galloway remains confusing. 11 points in 21 minutes, while the Duke Wayne Ellington, he's a 3-point streamer. He's nothing else. He's not a must-roster guy. 3 triples from the Duke, while the Duck Luke Kennard had only the 8 points. But the 32 minutes is very encouraging for Kennard. More of a 14-teamer than a 12-teamer. My man, Derek White, must-roster player, 15-6-4, 1 steal, 2 blocks, 58% shooting, available in 56% of leagues. You know what I'm going to say. Fingers out of arseholes. Go and grab him. He's got to be rostered. Aldridge, 24-5-3, and DeRozan, 17-13-8. At a change to the Spurs starting lineup, Rudy Gay remained on the bench. Davis Bertans went to the bench, and Jakob Poeltl started and had his best game for the season, 11-14 with 3 blocks. That's strong. I thought if he could be a starting center on this team, he could be a 12-team league guy. Of course, that hasn't manifested itself. He's clearly ahead of Pau Gasol, and if he's going to play high 20s in minutes, he's going to have some short-term 12-team value. Of course, I don't trust it. I don't think Rudy Gay is going to stay at 21 minutes a night, but it's a situation for us to watch for both Gay and for Poeltl to see how this minutes plays out. Bertans went from starting to going scoreless in 15 minutes. Brittany Forbes hurt his calf in this game. 6 points for Forbes. He had hit both of his shots, but of course, in true Brent Forbes style, had done nothing else. The next game for us to look at, we've got the Indiana Pacers and the Dallas Mavericks. Tyreke was out, as was Domantas Sabonis. Wes Matthews, strong from Wesie, 20 points with 4 triples. He's a points and threes streamer. He doesn't do anything else, but he helps you in that area, while Miles Turner had 13-5 with 4 steals and a block, and Boyan had 22. Corey Joseph saw a bump in his minutes with Tyreke out. 7-4-4, 2 steals and a block is okay, but that's not going to be a long-term thing. Well, Daz Collison struggled, and Thad Young also had one of his worst games. The Cock Monster, only 11 minutes for Kylo Quinn, some early foul trouble, and a bafflingly low 4% usage. With Sabonis also out Thursday, we might get an interesting Cock game there, so I think he's worthy of a stream in that situation. For the Mavericks, that change in starting lineup, Dwight Powell remains starting, played 37 minutes and is a 12-team league guy. To me, he's a pretty clearly easy preference over Harry Giles, over Enes Kanter. I would very easily have him over both those guys. 12-7 with 2 steals for Powell. While Dirk, 16-teamers, you got to look at him. He's starting. He's playing 20-plus minutes. He's scoring 11 points, 3 triples, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. He looks better. He's having some value, and I think he'll stick in this starting lineup now. Finney Smith, 2 points in 20 minutes. He went to the bench, and Kleber had 6 points, two triples, a steal, and a block. That's the value that Kleber can provide. His minutes have been well down. His production had been well down. He's more of just a guy to watch. While Luka Doncic was excellent once again. Where's Doncic going to go in drafts next season? Top 20? Oh, I feel like he will. 26, 10, and 7 in 32 minutes for the Donch. On to the next game, the LA Clippers and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz win 111-105. Pat Beverly, 12-10, three steals and a block. Probably should be rostered in a 12-team league. It doesn't have to be yours. He really fits a specific build, a high rebounding defensive stat, accumulating point guard with low assists, but he's doing it well. The table, Montrezl Harrell had 16-8, while Ivica Zubats, he's a pretty clear drop, 7-8 in 18 minutes. Landry Shamet also very, very clearly not a 10, 12, or probably even 14-team league guy. He does nothing apart from threes, and you can get them from Reggie Bullock, from Wes Matthews, from Wayne Ellington. That's where Shamet sits. Gilgeous Alexander looked much better, but still only 19 minutes. Foul trouble limited him. He's one to watch, not one to roster. While Lou Williams was okay, apart from the shooting 18 points on 18 shots. For the Jazz, Gobert, 20-13 and 4 blocks, while Favors also brought it, 13-11 with 3 blocks. Limited minutes, though, for Favors. He's fine at the back end of a 12-team league, but limited upside. Jingle and Joe also has been much better since the All-Star break. 3 blocks from Jingle is a bit of a surprise, while the Don Mitchell had 32, 4, and 4.
He's Don. He's good.
And Ravishing Rick had 13, 3, and 3 before his injuries ended his night. Let's go on to the next game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Sacramento Kings. Overtime victory for the Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo, he missed the last game against the Bulls, and they said that they'd look to limit his minutes a little bit in this game. Well, they limited them a lot. 9 minutes in the first half. He didn't barely play in overtime, just 24 minutes total, 17-7 with 2 blocks. So you would have to think that in the next game the Bucks play, that Giannis' minutes might be kept a little bit lower as well. That meant that we got more Nikola Mirotic, who played 27 minutes and had 21-8 with 5 triples and 2 blocks. If he gets 27 a night, he's going to smash the top 100. Brogo was great. I tweeted this out today. Remember when Jason Kidd used to play DeAndre Liggins over Malcolm Brogdon? When it absolutely stuck out like dog's balls to anybody who's watched any basketball at any point in their life at all, that Brogdon was a better player. But no, we had to have him benched so that Liggins could get out there and do nothing. Eric Bledsoe, the bounce back happened here. 26, 12, and 13, a triple-double, 4 triples. Good on you, Bled, for doing that. While Paddy Connaughton, extra minutes with the Yanni limitations, 9, 5, and 4. And Middleton had some cramps late in the game, but he'll be fine. 21, 6, and 7 for old Middleton. For the Kings, we talked about Bogdanovic already. The Pencil had a career-high 14 rebounds, Harrison Barnes. 41 minutes, 15 points, 3 threes, a steal, and a block. Without the high rebounds, without the unusual defensive stats, it's still a shit game from Barnes. And, yeah, I would have him because of the Bagley injury. But as I said earlier, it's not like his failures were to do with lack of shots or lack of playing time. Heald had 32, and Giles, let's talk about him. 17 minutes for Giles. I talked about him a lot before. Let's talk his stat line. 18-7 with a block. That's fine. 69% shooting,
giggity,
not going to happen. 35% usage, not going to happen. So they're the two things that have really contributed to this great line from Giles. And again, didn't play in overtime and only saw the 17 minutes, which is basically what he sees every night. Will Cauley-Stein was bad, 10-9, but he played those 32 minutes. And I think that's probably a more realistic expectation of what we can expect for the time that Bagley is out. While Corey Brewer played 20 minutes and he becomes a steals streamer. Interestingly, Alec Burks was out of the rotation entirely. The last game of the night, the Pelicans and the Lakers, the Anthony Davis charade continues, 22-8 in 21 minutes, didn't play the fourth quarter. You can't drop him. He's obviously not the same guy. It's frustrating. So many of us who had him with that number one pick are really pissed at this point. Well, Julius Randle played 40 minutes. He had 35-6 with some excellent percentages, a strong night from Randle. And we also had a good Frank Jackson game, 15-4 in 29 minutes. Now, the Pelicans did waive Tim Frazier today. Frazier wasn't playing at all, so that's not an issue there. But maybe down the track, it prevents Elvin Gentry from playing him over Jackson, which is something that infuriated me all season. The Pelicans are looking at signing Darius Bertans, who is Davis Bertans' brother, a sharp-shooting big man with red hair, very similar to his brother. Frankie Jackson, just that deeper league guy. Darius Miller knocked in 3 triples. Well, Drew Holiday, so much for a minutes limit. 36 minutes here. That is big minutes in 3 consecutive games. 19, 7, and 10. So glad that we can trust the bullshit that Alvin Gentry throws out there. Well, Lord Alfred Payton had 6, 11, and 9 in 31 minutes, and he is a must-roster guy. Kendrick Williams, the bloom is off the rose there. 2 points in 24 minutes. That's under 30 minutes for 2 consecutive games. And Jahlil Okafor played 3 minutes. He had 3 fouls, but only 3 minutes for Jahlil. It's impossible, I believe, to hold him in 12-team leagues. Well, check Diallo, give him 25 minutes, and he smashes top 100, but they won't. 7 points in 15 minutes for old Check. The Lakers, they changed their starting lineup up. They went small. They took the center out and started Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, at center, and they put Rajon Rondo back in. And we can look at Rondo's line here and go, that's great. 11, 7, and 16 with 2 steals. And it is really valuable. He was absolutely piss poor for nearly all of this game. He came alive in the fourth quarter, put up some good numbers, but he is still an absolute train wreck defensively, and he's probably worse. He's more of a hindrance on this team than a positive. The problem is here that the Lakers won with him playing those minutes and Stevenson playing 21, despite them still being massive negatives, and that means that we're probably going to see Rondo keep that role until Lonzo returns. Now, Lonzo is getting reevaluated tomorrow, so we should get a report on that on Thursday, but Rondo can be that stream guy. But don't let this fool you. He was not good in this game, apart from a small stretch in the fourth quarter. He was piss poor prior to that, but then put his really interesting run at the end of the game. Reggie Bullock, 14 and 5. The 2 steals and a block are nice from Bullock. Out of all of those 3-point streamers, Allington and Matthews and Shamet and those guys, Bullock's probably the closest to being a 12-team league must roster, but he's not. Ingram, 23 and 6. He's been really, really good lately. Ingram, shit to start the season, but really strong of late. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, 22 and 5. As for McGee, he's not a must drop, but it's pretty close. 10 and 4 in 11 minutes. I'd like to see what the Lakers do next game in terms of the starting lineup. But knowing Luke Walton, he will absolutely stick with this starting lineup. 7 minutes for KCP, 10 minutes for Josh the Hitman Hart, 2 minutes for Tyson Chandler. The 10 minutes of Josh Hart it should be fireable with Lance Stevenson playing 21 minutes in any situation. But of course, KCP and Hart, they're not 12 or probably not even 14 team league guys at this point in the season. Let's flip this over now to talk some DFS, of course, with the 6 games coming up on Thursday. The perfect lineups on DraftKings: Trae Young, DeAndre Bembry, Jeremy Lamb, Trevor Ariza, Karl Anthony Towns, Eric Bledsoe, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and Rajon Rondo for a total of 449.75, and that costs $49,600. And then on FanDuel, Bledsoe, Rondo, Bogdanovic, Hield, Ariza, Porter, Giles, Randall, and Towns for a total of 427.6, and that costs the full $59,600. All right, guys, let's take a look at DFS for Thursday. 6 games on, a ton of teams with back-to-backs as well. So that should make things relatively interesting. The first game, looking at DraftKings pricing mainly for today. The first game we look at, the Golden State Warriors, one of those teams on a back-to-back. They'll be taking on the Orlando Magic in Orlando. The Warriors are 6-point favorites, the total 226. The Magic need a bounce-back win after their bad loss to the Knicks. The Warriors also lost to the Heat. They're less in need of victories as what the Magic are. DeMarcus Cousins sat out Wednesday, so he'll be back in here. No word on Sean Livingston or Andre Iguodala, whether they are likely to rest. I would imagine that at least one of those guys sits out this game for the Warriors, but we don't have that info at this point. At point guard, DJ Augustin, who's been playing pretty well lately, averaging over 30 in the last 3 at 4,500. I think he's an option. I still have a little bit of concern about the consistency level of DJ, whether his floor is high enough, and then on the flip side, is his ceiling high enough to be used in either format of DFS? I'm not totally sold, but that sort of salary, the recent production, that gives me some level of decent confidence. While Steph Curry generally does pretty well against the Magic, he's at 9,100. I think he's a pretty strong cash play with also some tournament upside. Jaren Grant, Sean Livingston, I'm not really going to be looking at those guys. Klay Thompson was fantastic in today's game against the Heat. He's at 6,500. Happy to go back to the well with Klay here. You got Terry Ross, who was just dreadful against the Knicks. Only 5 points in that one. I imagine a pretty strong bounce back comes from Terry. And at 5,100, I think he is absolutely in play. Fournier at 5,800. I'd have him behind Ross in terms of pecking order for the Magic shooting guards. Still not a terrible option, though. Aaron Gordon at 6,400. I really do like that salary for Azza. I think he's in play here against Golden State. Well, Johnny Isaac has been really, really strong. Now, 5,800, he is an option on DraftKings. He's not the best option, but there is at least some cash value in what Isaac has been doing lately. And of course, Kevin Durant at 9,200, absolutely in play in both formats of the game, GPPs or in cash, $100 more than Steph Curry. For the big men, Nikola Vucevic, 9,300. Big men against the Warriors have put up good numbers all season. I don't see really any reason why what Vucevic has been doing is going to abate. He's averaging 53 points over the last five games. No reason for him not to continue doing that, so I love him here. On the flip side, Boogie Cousins, 7,900. He had a 52-point game the last time he played against the Hornets. 7,900, you get 50 points, you're pretty bloody happy with that. The Magic have been pretty good at allowing opposition players to put up numbers at center. So Cousins is in play here. The risk you run is how the minutes are going to be distributed by Steve Kerr.
But you can call me Coach Steve.
And that leaves a bit of pause there with Cousins. He's probably more of a GPP guy than a cash player. You got Draymond at 6,000, which is obviously really low, but he hasn't even been playing up to that sort of a level. He's just a tournament guy. Kem Birch is a nothing guy along with Jordan Bell. Over on FanDuel, Aaron Gordon at 7,000, Johnny Isaac at 6,000. A big price drop for Isaac as well, $500 down on FanDuel. Steph is at 9,300, I like that. Vooch at 10,400, I also think that's pretty good. I think Cousins is too high over on FanDuel at 8,600. I just wouldn't have too much faith in the floor there of DeMarcus Cousins. Next up, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Indiana Pacers, both of these teams on a back-to-back. The Pacers are 3.5-point favorites, a total 221.5. The Pacers generally are pretty good at limiting opposition point guard production, but the problem is for Minnesota, we don't know who the point guard's going to be. Jeff Teague has missed the last two games.
My name is Jeff.
With that knee soreness, could it be Tyus Jones? Could it be Teague? Either of those guys, you're going to have to downgrade just a little bit for playing against Indiana. I like Darren Collison a lot here at 6,000. He's just been a relatively consistent source of 30-plus points. No reason to go too far away from him here. Derrick Rose at 5,600 has been in about that ballpark, so I think he is a relatively safe cash guy as well. Joseph Safade, well, Tyus Jones at that 4,500, we love him if Teague is out. If Teague plays, he's probably more of a tournament guy in case Jeff's minutes are limited. Well, Jeff himself at 5,500 would be a bit of a wild tournament pick. I like Bojan Bogdanovic at 5,400, pretty strong floor cash guy there. Wesley Matthews is only ever tournaments. Andy Wiggins at 6,100 played relatively well in Wednesday's game. He's been quite up and down, but in general, he's been about that level of value at 6,100, so definitely not someone to completely fade away from. For the small forwards, you're going to have Thad Young at 5,900. Been really happy with what Thad has been doing. Has been doing most of this season, or most of the recent times. He wasn't as good on Wednesday, but still putting up strong numbers in the aggregate. I think he's worth looking at in a relatively positive matchup here for Thad. Well, Josh Okogie got some extra minutes with Luol Deng hurt in Wednesday's game. We don't know Deng's status for this one as he is dealing with that sore Achilles. He's questionable heading into this game along with Jeff Teague. For the big men, Miles Turner, love that at 6,000. Kylo Quinn was not good on Wednesday, but at 4,000 with Domantas Sabonis out again, O'Quinn gets another opportunity. I really like him for tournaments, but that's about it. While Townsie is just annihilating people, 10,500 for Townsie is a massively strong cash option. Šarić is a no-go for me. Taj Gibson, I'm not interested in either. Over on FanDuel, similar bunch of guys. Collison and Turner look pretty good. Bogdanovic, Thad Young looks okay on FanDuel. I love Towns at 11-2. Wesley Matthews is a GPP sort of a player. Wiggins at 6,500, probably less appealing on FanDuel than what he is on DraftKings. Next up, it's the Cavs and the Knicks. The Knicks are 3-point favorites here. The total, 217. The Knicks have won their last two. They're going for three in a row, and they've got a massive opportunity to get this victory over the Cavs, who are just as poor as the Knicks. At point guard, you've got Emmanuel Mudiay at 4,900. He had 33 points in 32 minutes last game as the Knicks' box score was completely upside down and all of their bench players played more minutes than their starters. We have literally no idea what Fizdale is going to do on any sort of situation, so it is tough to rely on Mudiay, much like it's tough to rely on Dennis Smith. Now, both of those guys would just be tournament guys, and you wouldn't want to combine them in one lineup. They are in alternate lineups and see which way Fizdale decides to wake up. Jordy Clarkson's at 5,100. 100, really just a tournament guy at the moment, while Trier the same. Who knows what he is going to do? He had 33 points last game. A couple of games ago, he had 7 points. The minutes are all over the place. The production's all over the place. The Padawan Colin Sexton, $5,000 for him. Yeah, really just for tournaments. I'm not super into Sexton. Brandon Knight, John Jenkins, Matty Dellavedova, they're all fades, of course. At shooting guard, you got Damo Dotson at 4,600, who was dreadful, predictably, after 2 strong games and played only 17 minutes. He's probably got 2 more games of sub-20 minutes in him before Fizdale decides to develop the youth once again and get him back into 30 minutes. So realistically, he's just a tournament guy, as nearly all of these Knicks guys are. On the wing, Chetty Osman, 4,900. He is playing at a really elevated level. I like him. He's meshing very well with Kevin Love, putting up 33 a game over the last 3. At that salary, that's pretty tough to ignore. While the Fort Kevin Knox at 5,200, I'll take Chetty every day of the week at only $300 more. For the big men, let's go into Hank Allinson, 3,700 for Henry. He had 37 points in 36 minutes last game. Literally nobody could have had any anticipation of him doing that. The likelihood of him playing 30-plus minutes again, you'd put it at about 20% given the Fizdale treatment, but you have to at least have him in a GPP pool. I like Kevin Love at 6,900.
Giggity!
His production's been up, his minutes are rising. I think he's got a huge chance of exceeding that 35-point mark here. While Mitchie Robinson, DeAndre Jordan is out, Robinson's salary has gone up 1,000. Still not up high enough, 6,400. He is going to be pretty chalk, but I still think that there's a ton of value in that salary. Larry Nance at 6,000 has been definitely under that number. I'm not really keen on him at all. Ante Zizic at 4,200 would really just be a tournament guy. And Noah Vonleh again. He could it be 35 minutes for Vonleh in this one as Fizdale spins the wheel of coaching bullshit to see what rotation ends up on the other side? On FanDuel, Mitchie Robinson's up to 7,400, but I still like it. I like Love at 75, and then those same sort of weird flyers like Moutier and Allinson are in play over there as well. Yes, Dennis Smith really tough to use at 7,100 again, given the nature of those rotations. Philadelphia and Oklahoma City. The Thunder are 7.5-point favorites in the total, 239. That's a big, big total there. Boban is out for Philadelphia, as is Joel Embiid, so we're going to be getting Prison Mike Scott and Jonah Bolden going up against Steven Adams. So some interesting lineups could be run out there for Philadelphia. At point guard, Schroeder's at 4,700. He played 32 minutes last game because Terry Ferguson was struggling. I think you look at him as a tournament sort of guy. I love Westbrook at 11,100, while Benny Simmons comes in at 8,400. He has had a pretty strong record against the Thunder, averaging 47 the last 3 times against them. I think he's in play, especially for tournaments. I like Redick a lot for cash at 5,000. That's a strong floor play. While General Saunders, Jimmy Butler at 7,100, hasn't been playing massively well, but still providing, you know, close to that value. He's got a massive record against OKC, mainly as a member of the, or only as a member of the Timberwolves, but I like him at that elevated salary, or sorry, reduced salary. At small forward, Prison Mike, 3,800. He did play 31 minutes last game and only gave us 17 points, but all he needs is a couple more shots to fall, and he exceeds that number pretty comfortably. And this is a game, of course, that Boban won't be playing in. So I like Prison Mike quite a bit here, while Paul George at 10,400 is a strong cash play. Toby Harris also, I think, looks pretty strong in this game at 7,300, playing really, really well without Joel Embiid in the lineup. For your bigs, Jeremy Grant was big last game. He's at 4,900. Rock solid cash option, I believe. Steve Adams at 6,300. Yeah, I'm not sure he's quite at that level despite Embiid being out. Noel, Markeith, not really worth it. But Jonah Bolden is worth a flyer. 27 points in only 18 minutes last game. He can rack them up in multiple categories. And if he can stay out of foul trouble and gets to 24 minutes, then that $4,000 price point will be smashed pretty quickly by Jonah Bolden. So I think he is absolutely an in-play option for the Philadelphia 76ers. On FanDuel, you've got Prison Mike, Benny Simmons, General Saunders. All of those guys have some tournament value, along with Bolden, who comes in at a very tasty 3,900. Westbrook and Steve Adams especially on FanDuel, the pricing does suit him quite a bit. Jeremy Grant also at 5,800. Let's go on to the next game now. We're looking at the Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets, both of these teams coming off a back-to-back. The Rockets are 9-point favorites, the total 218.5. The Miami Heat on that big victory over the Golden State Warriors. They had no Hassan Whiteside, they had no Jim Johnson, so both of those guys' status at this point are up in the air. Chris Paul is also going to play despite this being a back-to-back for the Heat. Jimmy Harden's at $11,000. Hasn't quite been at that level yet. It is a limited slate of games, so I think you do have to include Harden here, only because he's down at $11,000, while Dwayne Wade just killing it every night at the moment. He's really a strong option at $5,100. I'm in on Wade here, while Justice Winslow at $5,000, also getting that number pretty much most every night, so I do like all three of those guys as cash and tournament guys. Chris Paul also seems a lock for 40 points these days, $8,300, while Goran Dragic absolutely exploded against Golden State. 33 DraftKings points in 20 minutes. It was on about 38% usage and 65% shooting, so numbers which can't sustain. At 4,400, he is a tournament guy, but there's also a chance, I think, that Dragic doesn't even play in this game as it's a back-to-back. Eric Gordon started last game. He's at 4,800. Whether he goes in this one remains to be... whether he starts in this one remains to be seen. I would almost assuredly think that he does, considering Fareed is also battling an injury. So Gordo at 4,800 is a tournament guy, but that's really about it. Joshy Richardson down at 5,700. I actually like him at that salary. And Dion Wade has shit the bet against the Warriors. But at 4,900, he might be a contrarian punt option for tournaments. If Fareed is out, then you get someone like Gerald Green, who could get a bit of a bump, especially with Iman Shumpert also dealing with his own injuries. PJ Tucker's at 4,000. He's been getting that number relatively consistently, so not a bad cash guy, especially if Fareed does have to miss time. For the big men, Capella was right back, all the way back against the Hornets, but is a massive positive against the Hornets for centers. 6,700 for Clint. He dropped 53 in that game. I think that he is a relatively strong play, especially if Fareed is out, while Whiteside at 68 and does pretty well against the Rockets, averaging 40 the last three times, but of course we don't know if he is going to play. And if he is out, then we get Bam Adebayo as an absolute lock cash at 4,000. If James Johnson is ruled out again, Kelly Olynyk at 4,900 also is a pretty strong cash lock. On FanDuel, similar sort of stuff. Dragic at 41, interesting upside play. I like Harden at 11,700. Eric Gordon's a tournament guy there as well. Chrissy Paul, maybe that's pushing a little bit too high for Chris Paul at that $8,700 mark. It wades up to 6,200. That might be a bit too high, but with how he's playing, it's really hard to completely disregard Dwayne Wade at that sort of a salary. All right, let's go now on to the last game of the night. We're looking at the Utah Jazz and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are 6-point favorites. The Jazz, another team on a back-to-back here. The total, 223.5. You've got Nikola Jokic versus Rudy Gobert, a pretty big matchup there of the big men. At point guard, the blue arrow, Jamal Murray. He's not really losing much in terms of playing time or production. He's giving us 30 a night recently, and at 6,200, I think he is worth a look on this sort of a slate. Isaiah Thomas at 3,700 is just a GPP guy. While Ravishing Rick at 6,100 has been really strong lately, most of the games anyway, and not a bad guy to consider here. The Donovan Mitchell
is Don. He's good.
$8,000 for Mitch. He's giving us 40 a night relatively consistently. I like the value there. Malik Beasley, Monty Morris, I wouldn't be getting too interested in them. Jingle and Joe's at 5,000. He's been sort of resurgent over the last week or so since the All-Star break anyway. I think there's good value in him there. Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
Just don't think we want to get too much into Gaz with how limited he is at the moment. While Farton Will Barton at 5,000, really just a tournament guy. I'm not super keen on his consistency. Jay Crowder's at 42, who's been consistently getting over that number. It is a positive matchup for Crowder. I think he is worth a look at 4,200, especially for cash. Royce O'Neal's not going to really do it for me. At center, Nikola Jokic at 10,000. Love it. He should roll to 50 comfortably. Favors at 45 is probably going to be a fade for me, while Mason Plumlee also, and Gobert at 8,200. I think Gobert at 8,200 is okay. He has struggled against Denver in the past. And I'm not massively into him here in this matchup. I'd much rather spend up for someone like Jokic. On FanDuel, Jokic again at 11-1 looks really, really good. Murray at 68, not too bad. Gary Harris, more appealing on FanDuel at that 4,600, but still probably looking at him just for GPPs. Let's look at some studs and values now. On DraftKings, I like Jokic as a stud and a value play of JJ Redick. On FanDuel, the stud is Jokic again, and my value is Mitchie Robinson. And then on DraftStars, my stud is Karl Anthony Towns, and my value play is Jonah Bolden. That'll do it for today's podcast. If you're stuck in the car, why don't you get your smart device to play your favorite episode of your favorite team's Locked On Podcast Network show. Just tell your smart device to play the podcast Locked On and insert your team name there. After you do that, go leave a 5-star rating for this show on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or on YouTube. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Chris Paul.